Welcome to another episode of Romance Romp. I'm your host, Keeney Allen. Today, I'm joined by New York Times and USA Today bestselling author, Kristen Higgins. First of all, thank you so much for taking time to chat with me this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome. I love podcasts.
Oh, do you?
I'm sort of a podcast addict. So.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, I have like 10 that I listen to regularly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm like new, and there's one I listen to absolutely regularly, and others when I can.
Yeah. Which one do you listen to regularly?
I listen to the Rob Cast. He is part of like Oprah's stable of like do-gooders, self-helpers.
Oh, okay.
So his is more kind of like religious and spiritual based, but a lot of like self-help and just being a better person.
That's great. That's great.
What about you? Is there one that's like your favorite?
There's one called Criminal that is really interesting. It goes over cold cases. Mm-hmm. And it does a really in-depth job about, you know, people who were charged with a crime and maybe didn't do it, or people who did do it and have an interesting story. And I kind of love it. I think it's just really good reporting.
I've heard of it, but I don't think I've ever listened to it. One of the reasons why I don't listen to a lot of podcasts is I like to listen to them at work. And I had once tried to get into Serial, but I found myself like listening too much and not being able to work and like wanting to tell people like, don't you know I'm doing something right here?
Right, podcasts. I know. That was very intense.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an intense one.
So, yeah, so podcasts can be fun. So, first I wanted to tell you that so Catch of the Day is one of my favorite books.
Oh, thank you.
And I was like, as I was like getting ready for this interview, I was thinking back about it. And first, it used to be one of my like go-to comfort reads. And I feel like Malone was kind of my first grumpy, didn't talk a lot, heroes. And and I think I see a lot more of those now. But he was probably like the first book boyfriend where I was like, he's so grumpy. I love him.
Yeah, that he was really fun to write because mm-hmm. You know, that book was written in first person, and I think a lot would have been taken away from the story if we did know what he was thinking, because he was such an enigma to Maggie, and he's definitely one of those men where actions speak louder than words, you know, and if you've, you know, thought about it as much as I have, you notice that every time Maggie needs something or wishes for something, he's there.
Right.
Even if it's in a way she doesn't recognize at first.
Exactly. Yeah, I just, I actually found it in print recently, and I started doing a reread, and I was like, yeah, he picked her up when she fell off her bike.
Right.
She was on that horrible date, and he was there, and yeah, he kind of just like snuck in on her.
Right.
So it was really great. And I saw that you won the Rita in 2008 for that.
Yes, I did. It was my second book. And the year before, I didn't even know what a Rita was. I had never been to a big conference like that or anything. And so I was definitely the dark horse candidate, I think, because nobody had ever read me. And so it was a wonderful moment. I mean, you know, I was in a category with some of my favorite authors, and, you know, it just sort of like, I'll just follow behind you and hold your train, that kind of attitude, you know?
Yeah.
So
you were just there.
Yeah.
And then kind of an unexpected win.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how long have you been writing romance?
I've been writing since my son was 3 and he's 18. So 15 years now. And I've been published for 10.
Okay.
In that my first book came out 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I had always had a job as a writer. I was in public relations and advertising. And then I did some freelance editing when I had my kids when they were babies. And then when my son was in nursery school, my husband was working two jobs and I was a stay-at-home mom. And I was thinking, you know, I can't really justify my poor husband breaking his back out there. He was a fireman and an electrician, and you're just working in all the time. And I thought I have to do something. When the kids get to school, I have to be able to contribute. But I didn't want to, you know, put them in daycare or hire a babysitter. So I thought maybe I could write a book. And it was this very whimsical thought, like, you know, hey, I've read a lot of books. Maybe I could write one. And, you know, but I think that that's where everybody starts, you know, I don't know a lot of people who planned to be a novelist. So it was that sort of, let me give it a try. And at first I wanted to write historical romance because I love to read historical romance. And I was like in love with Julia Quinn and Eloisa James and their books, Mary Balog. And then I realized like, oh, you have to do a lot of research for this, you know, I should be really smart to pull this off.
Right. I've noticed that. I don't read historical at all, but I've read a few. And it just astounds me how much must have to go into that. Because you can't just say, like, they go in the room and flip on the lights.
Right. Everything is different. Right. And, you know, with the really good historical romance writers, you know, everything is so carefully researched. I mean, I think that you could make a map of Julia Quinn's London and go to London and see everything that she puts in there. You know, she's so precise. So I decided, you know, maybe I could write a book about someone like me, you know, who's not extraordinarily beautiful or talented, or I'm not a billionaire's daughter. I'm not a, you know, a billionaire myself. So just like the girl next door kind of thing, my sister, my friends. And because at the time, and this was a while ago, there was no small town romance. Okay. And there was Sex in the City, and there was vampires and Navy SEALs and that kind of thing, and the historical genre, of course. But there wasn't anything that really spoke to like my experiences and my friends' experiences. So I wanted to write a story about a normal person, you know, where we could see ourselves in her, not kind of that escapist kind of heroine, you know, where she is so perfect and beautiful and wealthy, and she has a butler and stuff, you know. I mean, those are great too, but they weren't as relatable for me. So I decided to write about an ordinary person who had a regular job and all that stuff. And I wanted, you know, I wanted, it's as soon as I started to write it, from the very first line, it was funny. And I thought, well, who doesn't love romantic comedy? And it was just kind of a combination of luck and the right book at the right time. You know, it was fresh because, again, like everyone was writing the Sex and the City, New York, Cosmos, Jimmy Choo's kind of book. And I still don't know what a Jimmy Choo is. I mean, I know it's a shoe. I don't think I've ever seen one.
I've seen them on TV, and that's about it. Yeah, and I think for me, like as a reader, I kind of transitioned from women's fiction to romance. And because a lot of women's fiction started writing a lot of the Sex in the Cities, you know, and they weren't relatable. And I think you do a great job with that small town kind of, you know, not in a bad way, but like the regular woman, you know, we have jobs, we meet regular men. I mean, you know, it's fun sometimes to read that billionaire romance, but it's also hard to see myself in that.
Right. And I think too, like, a lot of that billionaire romance is very, very much fantasy, you know, like 50 Shades of Grey. I'm sure E.L. James, you know, is enjoying a lot of wealth now. But when she wrote the book and like the depictions of what it means to be a billionaire businessman at the age of 26 or something is very fanciful. And I like I like realism. So if I were to ever write a really wealthy heroine or hero, and in fact I did in Somebody to Love, I wanted it to feel very real. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I do in Somebody to Love is bankrupt my heroine, mm-hmm. Who really has no idea of what it's like not to have a trust fund. You know, she's never had to support herself. Mm-hmm. And so that made it a lot more fun for me to write about her, because she didn't know how to replace a mop head, you know, but she was willing to try. So sort of a reverse Cinderella story.
Okay. Yeah. Is the heroine in that one Parker?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It took me a moment to refresh myself on that. But yes, right. I remember that now. So you had mentioned that you used to read a lot of historical fiction. That's kind of what got you started in romance. So I was looking, and Wikipedia says that Gone with the Wind is your favorite book.
It is. I mean, I have many favorite books. You know, if they said take one book to the desert island, I would say, no, I have to take 10.
Right.
You know, so Gone with the Wind, I read at a very formative time. I was, mm-hmm. I think I was 13 or 14 when I read it. I was mm-hmm. in eighth grade. And I had never read anything like Scarlett O'Hara, mm-hmm. you know, who was so complicated and so horrible and so strong,
right?
You know, I was so in love with Rhett Butler. I didn't go on a date until I was like 18 and three quarters, but who's counting? But yeah, I just think because that book and that love that he had for her, you know, mm-hmm. it's not really a romance, that book. I mean, it's a work of great historic fiction, and it won the Pulitzer Prize. But it does have that essence of romance in it, because Rhett sees who Scarlett really is, and he loves her for that. And all the airs that she puts on, and all the projecting that she does when she thinks she wants to be like her mother or Miss Melly, or, you know, he sees right through all that, and he loves her for being that strong, ruthless woman.
Right. Yeah, I read it in seventh grade, and all my classmates were like, why are you reading that? And I wanted to be like, why aren't you reading it?
This will change your life.
It will.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think between Gone with the Wind, I discovered it in seventh grade, and I also started getting Sassy Magazine in seventh grade.
Those, oh my gosh, Sassy. Things,
yes. Like, they changed my life. Like,
right.
Who I was, like, as a person. And I was like, yeah, because in seventh grade, we were reading just whatever seventh graders read. And then to read Gone with the Wind, where it's like this, you know, saga. And mm-hmm. yeah, she was horrible. He loved her anyway. Mm-hmm. And just like, oh, they have this in books. So.
I know, right?
Like, I and she,
what I loved about Scarlett was that she always had more. She always could give more, mm-hmm. and she was ruthless and amoral. But when the chips were down, you know, she was the one who picked the cotton and took care of her sisters and mm-hmm. killed the Yankee and right. birthed the baby. You know, she made it happen, and she was so strong. And, you know, there's just not, at the time, certainly there weren't a lot of women like that in literature.
Yeah.
And there weren't for seventh grade girls either.
No, not at all. I don't remember was, what else I read, but yeah, that was
that like, the Babysitter's Club? Yeah. You know, not quite the same thing.
Not at all. And I'm pretty sure up to that point I had been reading Babysitter's Club, and that just changed everything. And then all of a sudden I was reading adult books and
mm-hmm, right.
Danielle Steele.
Yes. Kathleen Woodywiss. Like
yeah. All that. So, okay, so back to your books. But so you read all, or excuse me, you write a lot of like small town, kind of regular people. One of the things that I see in all your books are you use like a lot of dogs as characters, which, you know, I read, oh gosh, I have to look at my notes. the first one, but or four on second thought. I have it down. Oh, If You Only Knew. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So the dog and that, how he dies with Leo, that was just so heartbreaking.
I know. I'm so mean. I am. He's not the first dog I've killed, as you know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that dogs are a metaphor for how we love people, mm-hmm. you know, and what our hearts really are. It's hard for me to dislike a dog lover, you know, because they are, the love you have for a dog is so pure and so simple. We have a puppy right now, Luther, mm-hmm. and he's a terrible, terrible destroyer of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many shoes and underwear he takes out of the laundry and, you know, pajamas and the door, mm-hmm. you know. And I love him so much. You know, he's perfect to me because he's just a little, well, he's a giant ball of love now. But the way Leo loves that dog, mm-hmm. Loki, and what he does for the dog, you know, to keep that dog alive and what the dog symbolizes to him. I love the scene where he takes him to the swanky dinner party mm-hmm. in New York. And, you know, for quite a while, that dog is the most important creature in Leo's life.
Right.
And, yeah, it breaks him when the dog dies.
It was so sad.
Thank you. So, I'm glad I broke your heart.
Yeah, it's the best worst, right?
So. Right.
So the last two books, If You Only Knew, and then your new book on Second Thought, they really kind of center around the relationship of two sets of sisters. Mm-hmm. So why sisters?
Well, I have a sister. She's 15 months younger than I am.
Okay.
And she's been my best friend since birth mm-hmm. and to this day. And there's something really complicated and special about sisters, mm-hmm. you know. We're competitors. We measure ourselves against each other mm-hmm. in good ways and bad. You know, am I as nice as my sister? Is she as hardworking as I am? Why is she taller and thinner than I am? Mm-hmm. I'm going gray faster. That's not fair. You know, those kind of things. But also they're like the touchstone for your life. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the person who knows you so well because you share DNA, you share a childhood. No one will get the jokes about your parents the way she will. In the case of Jenny and Rachel mm-hmm. in If You Only Knew, they're very close and they always have been. Mm-hmm. They love each other. They're very different. Jenny is a little more sophisticated and adventuresome. Rachel is very sweet and kind. And when Rachel's life starts to, you know, just fall apart, mm-hmm. Jenny is her biggest advocate. Right. And you get into that problem where, you know, when things go wrong, you call your sister. Mm-hmm. And Rachel thinks her husband is having an affair. And so she calls like her number one Lancelot kind of person, her sister. You know? But then when she tries to work things out with her husband, Jenny's not on board. You know, it's like, no, he hurt you and I hate him.
She was ready and, to fight him.
Yeah. And right. And it's so hard for her when Rachel says, look, we've got three kids. I can't just walk away from this. So there's always that difficulty in like, I know too much, mm-hmm. you know, and then my sister's going to punish me for knowing what I know. Mm-hmm. In On Second Thought, the sisters are not close. They have this really interesting family dynamic where their father left his first wife, who's Kate's mother, mm-hmm. married Michelle, who's Ainsley's mother, mm-hmm. and then Michelle died. And he goes back to his first wife with his toddler in tow. So she's the other woman's child and they're half sisters. They're 7 years apart in age. So they've spent some of their childhood together, mm-hmm. But there's a clear line, you know, we don't share a mother. And that was always made very clear. You know, right. You are the stepdaughter, you are the half sister.
Right. Candy didn't really do a good job of showing that love to Ainsley.
Right. Yeah. But Ainsley is such a warm and loving character. I mean, she adores her sister, mm-hmm. and she's grateful for whatever Kate gives her. And in the beginning of the book, I think Ainsley seems very naive and a little bit shallow, but as the book progresses, you see, you know, what a big heart she has and how she's such a caretaker. And also her, you know, why she ended up with a guy like Eric, you know, why she would put up with him.
Right.
Given her childhood and her family dynamics.
Yeah. I mean, it almost seemed like she was previously had been kind of afraid to rock the boat,
mm-hmm.
and just really she wanted somebody to love.
Right. And she had someone. I mean, he was a really good boyfriend. He gave right. her a lot of things that she wanted. Mm-hmm. Stability. She gave him his parents were wonderful, though. He, right. They were a big part of the package. And she felt needed. You know, she loves mm-hmm. feeling needed and the center of things rather than sort of this tacked on person in a family.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I really loved Kate and Ainsley's relationship. My sister and I are half sisters. I'm 11 years older than her.
Oh, so, wow.
So as children, we joke now that we were kind of like two only children.
Right.
But, you know, and then she ended up living with her dad. So there was like some separation. But now, like, we're best friends. And,
oh, that's great.
You know, I don't make decisions without my sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I saw a lot of our relationship with Ainsley and Kate.
That's really neat.
Just the kind of how we were older and came together. So it, you know, it had a lot of good points for me.
Good.
Yeah. So this book and your last one, they kind of touch on a lot of like heavier topics that you don't really see, at least I don't think you see a lot in traditional romance, like infidelity, death, sibling mm-hmm. issues, family issues, but a lot of that is just like real life.
Right. Again, it's, you know, my desire to write a realistic story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, families are messy, mm-hmm. even when they're wonderful.
Yep.
I was really intrigued with the idea of a widow who hadn't known her husband very long. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I came up with the idea a long time ago. I read an obituary that said something like, though they only met last year, theirs was a you know, love for the ages, mm-hmm. you know, and I thought, oh, that's so tragic, you know, and imagine kind of Kate meets this wonderful guy. She's 39 and, they have this whirlwind, lovely romance mm-hmm. and he asks her to marry her and she can't think of a reason to say no. Right. And, you know, I just like, how often will a guy like this come along? In 20 years of dating, I've never met anyone like him.
Right.
And yet we really don't know each other that well. So they get married and things seem to be going well, even though they're still a little bit awkward and mm-hmm. they want to have a baby. So they're trying right away to have a baby given their age. Mm-hmm. And then he dies in a sort of freak accident mm-hmm. and right in the beginning of the story. And she's kind of stranded in this new life. She left a very established life in Brooklyn. She's moved up to Westchester County, which is like a different world from mm-hmm. Brooklyn. And she lives on the same street as his parents and sister. Everybody in town knows him, loved him, has memories of him. And she feels like, I'm the one who knew him the least.
Right.
And I was his wife. And she really did love him. But it's an odd situation, you know. So she's just absolutely gobsmacked. And that's when her sister steps in and mm-hmm. starts, you know, their relationship starts to become more profound.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt really, like really hard for Kate to be there and almost like an outsider
right.
on this life that her husband had before her. And, But yeah, it still felt very real. So good job.
Thank
Yeah.
Thanks.
And I loved Jonathan and Ainsley.
I lost.
Yeah. Pardon?
Oh yes, Jonathan.
Yes. that whole relationship was, I really enjoyed it, and it seemed, you know, very, very romancy.
Yeah, that, I mean, I love writing a love story. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to write a book that didn't have one. Mm-hmm. I loved Jonathan so much. And I loved their sort of love-hate relationship, mm-hmm. Ainsley and Heath, because she's a terrible employee.
Yes.
And, you know, she doesn't take the job seriously. She thinks it's somewhat beneath her. You know, she's writing articles about mm-hmm. best pumpkin patches in Westchester County. And she used to work for an NBC News show. But I, another theme of this book is what is right for you mm-hmm. versus what you think is right for you mm-hmm. and who really comes through for you. So it's about a story of unexpected relationships, mm-hmm. I think. And Jonathan definitely falls into that category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. So this one to me and, the previous book, If You Only Knew, felt a little bit more like women's fiction with romantic mm-hmm. elements. Would you, mm-hmm. would
That's
you,
fair.
Okay. Or do you still classify them as romance?
Well, I think all of my books have always had that women's fiction element mm-hmm. in that it's not just witty banter and sexy time, you know, it's, which is great. Don't mm-hmm. get me wrong.
No.
But I think they've always had elements of family, other issues, learning about yourself, kind of coming into your own. In the last two books, I think the relationship has been more a part of the book than the book itself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know, I think that it's definitely still my kind of writing, just a little bit, focus is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's just a matter of packaging. I mean, I think you could say that my Blue Heron series would be women's fiction if we had put it out in a trade format with a different cover, you know,
right.
Because those again have those family issues and, mm-hmm. and, deeper themes than just, I really want to meet a great guy.
Right. And for me as a romance reader, I mean, I love where it's just fun, sexy times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that every now and again, but I also like to read like a real story. I always say this
right.
because like, love is messy even when it's the best kind.
Right.
Because of life. And so I like these like small town, they're kind of going on some other sort of journey also, and mm-hmm. they're falling in love.
Right. So it's about, you know, finding the one, but mm-hmm. finding yourself first, mm-hmm. you know. And in all my books, the characters have to earn that happily ever after, mm-hmm. you know, they have to break through something because there's a reason you start a book at a place where the character doesn't have what she wants or what mm-hmm. he wants. You know, they haven't evolved enough. They haven't broken through those doubts that have hounded them since, you know, childhood. So all those books, I mean, all the romance that I love and try to write is about that too, mm-hmm. is about that sort of redefinition of yourself and embracing the best parts of you
mm-hmm.
and letting go of some of the negative things. So they're always about, you know, you are good enough, but you could be better.
Right.
So keep trying, you know?
Yeah. So one of my friends, also reads a lot of your books. And so I was chatting with her last night. And so she was curious, do you have any plans to return to the more, like some of your earlier books were more romantic comedy
mm-hmm.
with, I mean, they still had some of these issues, but they were more comedic, if you will.
Yes. I don't know, you know, I never know what I'll write next.
Mm-hmm.
The book coming up after On Second Thought is called Now That You Mention It. And there are some hysterical scenes in there, you know, that you will laugh till you cry, I think. But there's also some dark scenes too. And, you know, I never want to write a book about a dead child or something like that. You know, I mean, that's, mm-hmm. that's too much, I think, for me right now anyway. The fluffier stuff, which I do love to write, it gets harder. You know, I've written, I'm working on my 18th book. So in some respects, I feel like, well, I've done the, you know, the sort of alpha female with lots of brothers, and I've done the love triangle, and I've, you know, I've done friends to lovers, that all those kind of things. I don't want to ever repeat myself. Mm-hmm. But I do love writing comedy, and it's my hope that every one of my books will have you cry and laugh, mm-hmm. and, you know, end feeling really warm and fuzzy. Hold the book to your chest and say, oh, I loved that.
Yeah, and you stay up until like 1:30 reading it, because you're like,
yes.
I just need to find out.
Right,
what's
right.
What's going to happen? So part of this, because your book is coming out today, releases today,
yep.
you're going to be at Turn the Page, yeah. Nora Roberts Bookstore in Boonesboro.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super excited about that. Have you ever been there before?
Yes, I've been there 2 or 3 times, okay. and I love the town of Boonesboro. It's mm-hmm. so pretty. And I love the Civil War. So it's right near Antietam mm-hmm. Battlefield, which is such a sacred place, you know. And I have been to the bookstore. I love and respect and admire Nora. And she has always been very warm and gracious to me, but I'm still in awe of her, you know, and this, on Saturday, we'll have quite a lineup of authors. We'll have Laurie Foster mm-hmm. and Jennifer Ashley and Nora and JD Robb. Mm-hmm. I laughed when I saw the sign. Yeah. I'm like, oh, they'll both be there. Mm-hmm. Because just in case you don't know, JD Robb is Nora Roberts, right. and vice versa.
Yeah.
So those signings are crazy, you know, and I watch Nora, and I watch the 600 people come in, and everyone wants a picture, and everyone brings at least 1 or 2 books mm-hmm. for her, and sometimes like 17, you know, and she is so wonderful. You know, she wears a wrist brace because that's how long she'll be signing. Mm-hmm. I was there, the last signing I was at, we were there for 6 hours.
Wow.
And she was just as nice to the last person as she was to the first. And I remember seeing her early in my career and thinking, that's how I want to be. I want to be that gracious and that lovely, you know, to the readers who make a point to come out and see you. It's such an honor that someone would stand in line to see you or travel to see you. Mm-hmm. And I never want to lose that sense of awe.
Yeah, it would seem that way. Like, this will be the first signing that I've gone to there. Just because, like, you're there, Kristen Ashley. I've read a few of Nora's books, but, you know, not a ton. But I'm like, this is such a great opportunity. It's, like, right in my backyard. These authors yeah. that I've been reading for years are going to be up there. But so it would seem like if there's an opportunity to go to Nora's store, you hop on it.
Yes, absolutely. And it's just the sweetest little town. You know, there's a bakery, there's the inn, there's a couple of restaurants. Mm-hmm. It looks like a Christmas card of a town, you know.
Yeah.
And the bookstore itself is really charming.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any other events coming up that you're doing for this book?
Yeah, actually I'm on an 8-city book tour. Mm-hmm. And I will be in Madison, Connecticut tonight at my local bookstore. Mm-hmm. I'll be in Cambridge, Massachusetts tomorrow. Nashville the day after that. Nora's on Saturday. And then I go to Seattle, Scottsdale, Los Angeles, and San Francisco.
Okay. So in LA, is that where the ripped bodice is.
Yes, that was my first time at that bookstore.
I follow
I'm
them
really
like on
excited.
all the social
Me
medias.
too. Me too. I'm really excited. They seem so great.
They
So
do. And they have that new dog.
I know that cute little dog.
Yeah. It's so funny because when we got the information that you were coming to town and the opportunity to do this interview, I was telling the editor, I was like, I follow her on social media. I'm going to be like a stalker.
Yay.
Yeah. She was like, what do you know about her? I was like, almost everything, but no, that's not true. Because she was like, where does she live? I was like, I think Connecticut with her husband. I was like, she calls him McIrish. I know these
Right.
things. Like, I'm
He,
like,
my husband loves to go to these events when people recognize him.
oh,
It's so cute. They're like,
yeah.
"Oh my gosh, can I have a picture with your husband?" Sure, I'll take it for you.
Well, I think part of it is like they don't, a lot of people that aren't into romance, they don't understand it and how it's kind of like it's a tight-knit community, if you will. So if you're in it, you're in it and you like follow people on social media, and a lot of authors will tweet about their family lives too. So you kind of like, that's why I was like, I mean, she has two kids. Like,
Right, right.
I'm like, but these are just things I've picked up on social media. So.
Yeah, that's, it's a whole other aspect of being a writer that when I first started was just starting, Facebook and having a, I remember like being told you need a website. Oh, okay, and starting to blog and that kind of thing. And I grew into being comfortable about it. I still think like I have a really happy, lucky, normal life. I married a really good guy and I have two healthy kids who are, now technically adults, 18 and 21. And what do I have to say? And then you start to realize what people like to hear. Like yesterday, my sweater was on backwards all day. And I, of course, that was the day that I had a thousand errands. And so everybody saw me. Nobody said, "Hey, Kristen, your sweater's on inside out." But that kind of thing, people get such a kick out of that. And they say, like, "You're just like us, Kristen," which is funny because, I'm the least glamorous person I know. And, when I go out as a an author to a book signing, I put on my slutty shoes and get all dressed up, but otherwise I'm in my bunny slippers and have a dog on my lap, So, but being able to share those moments and having people respond to that, it's such a, and I don't want to sound cheesy here, but it's such an honor. Like it really is such an honor that people not only spend time reading your books, but check in with you to see how you're doing, or they send you, pictures of their kids or their dogs, and or tell you that, oh, my sister died or something like that. The you start to realize like it's so important to connect with people, and it's such an honor when people read a book and say, this person would care that I'm going through a hard time.
Yeah, that must be such an honor.
Yeah, definitely is.
So kind of talking about social media. So earlier this week, I saw that you tweeted about kind of how not to really get into like politics, but with the whole current political climate, how it feels kind of
Yes, yeah.
wrong to be like promoting your book and doing these things when so much stuff is going on, and kind of how for you, romance, it is an escape, but yet it's not.
Right. It's, it's like a guidebook for how to be in the world, how to be a human with an open heart, someone who is not afraid to listen and admit that they were wrong, to grow as a person. And, we are in this political environment on both sides of the aisle where, minds are very closed. And and the evolution of a character in a romance novel or a women's fiction novel is that your mind gets opened, mm-hmm. and life is better for that. And also that these books are an affirmation that if you keep trying, and you keep working on yourself, you're going to end up in a better place.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And
so I think that, you know, I did feel very, you know, sort of self-centered saying like, hey, my book's out. But then I think too about the books that I've read during difficult times, and how they really saved me. I mean, a few years ago, I gave the keynote address at Romance Writers of America conference, and I talked about the times like when I was in middle school and I was bullied, and I would, you know, I might have been one of those kids who harmed herself or attempted suicide or something, but instead I had books, mm-hmm. you know, and I would wait to get home so I could read, you know, and then the boy who was bullying me, you know, it was like I have books to help me through, and you know, I had lost a baby, and I remember thinking I'm never going to come out of this, but I had books, and I would wake up, you know, half an hour after falling asleep, and read, mm-hmm. and they walked beside me, you know, they got me through that sad time, and mm-hmm. everybody has those tragedies in life, and our national mood right now is filled with a lot of fear from a lot of people, and this is a time when we need books more than ever.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, and I mean, just I was telling somebody, like, you know, I've learned probably more about myself reading romance than I have with any other kind of genre of books that I've read. And then my sister.
Why do you say that? What?
Just what kind of think? Like, because it is kind of like enlightening. Like, okay, I realize that this is just like fantasy, but. You know, it kind of is like, all right, I can do these things. Like, I can, you know, be a good mother and, you know, mm-hmm. just all sorts of things. I've also learned more about, like, being more aware of other cultures, mm-hmm. other people, other, you know, like, I say, like, I really learned and looked at myself about, like, slut shaming from an article I read on Dear Author.
Right, right.
So, because I think in romance books and the community, we're talking about a lot of things, like being, you know, aware of different sexualities and, mm-hmm. and cultures and just all sorts of different things. And possibly I could have picked it up elsewhere, but, you know, I attribute a lot of it also, and also being part of the community and feeling like I have this network.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. Right. You found your people.
I found my people.
Right. I think too, that one of the best things that, romance novels do is, they set a standard. And, you know, in some books, yeah, it's a little bit more unrealistic, a little bit more Hollywood. But they tell you what you deserve mm-hmm. in a relationship.
Absolutely.
And one of the best fan letters I ever got was from a young woman who said that she was in an abusive relationship and she had never met a guy like the ones in my books. Mm-hmm. But that my books taught her what love should be and what she deserved. Oh. And she left him.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, like, I burst into tears. I tried to read the letter to my family, but I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I was crying, you know. And I, but, you know, you don't think that, oh, I'm going to write a book that will inspire women in abusive relationships mm-hmm. to leave. You know, you just write a story, and then you start to see the effect that it can have on people. And I know from my personal experience, you know, I thought, I don't want to have to try to make somebody love me. Mm-hmm. You know, I want someone to just love me
sure.
you know, because I am who I am.
Yeah.
And, I am so grateful that this genre has been around my whole life, you know, and I'm so glad that I fell into it as young as I did.
Yeah, that's
Not that
awesome.
I didn't waste time with a few boys, but
Oh, no.
didn't we
No.
all, right?
Right. No, I get that wholeheartedly. And somebody who I'm not married, I think that's another thing, like that I've read these books and I say, yeah, I deserve somebody who loves me for me, right? Like,
Yeah.
you know, or it's even as simple as like meeting someone and being like, yeah, I spend most of my free time reading romance books. And if they like make a face, I'm like, this person's not for me.
Or they just don't know yet. They're
Right.
waiting to be converted.
Well, yeah, that could be. It depends on the level of face that they make. But yeah, that's
Faceometer.
exactly. If they're just like, well, anyway. But yeah. But yeah, I love romance, and I think, you know, it's nice to have like that kind of escape, but yet real things are happening in them.
Right.
So I love that. So anyway, that's about all I had for today. I'm really excited to see you on Saturday.
Yeah, me too.
I'm
Me
hoping
too.
that the weather is nice or decent.
I know it's supposed to snow here tonight.
Oh.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm thinking about all the traveling I have to do and, you know, the time of year that it is and hoping for the best.
Right, exactly. So I hope that my readers local, if they don't know that you're going to be there, that they'll come out and see you and get books signed and
Yeah.
but then also pick up on second thought. It was really good.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. But again, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome, and I'll see you
All
Saturday.
right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Join me next time when I sit down with Lee Fleming. Romance Romp is produced by Graham Cullen, Chris Sands, and me. Our theme music was written and produced by Kelsey Luce. Kristen will be signing books this Saturday, February the 4th, at Turn the Page in Boonesboro.